Hi, welcome to Together Equal Diversity Made Simple, hosted by me, Sarah Ebmash.
And me, Andrew Milne.
We'll be talking to guests about their diversity journey and asking them to share their experiences and their tip towards making the workplace more diverse, equal and inclusive. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Daniele Fiandaca, co-founder of Token Man. Daniele has decades of experience in the creative industries and is a big advocate of allyship. Daniele, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Very welcome. Before we get started, could you tell us a bit more about yourself and your role?
About myself. So I think I'm relatively unusual in the space of inclusion and diversity in that people can't see me, obviously. But if you could, if you typed the word privilege into Google Images, you would get someone that looks like me. I am a heterosexual, cisgender, neurotypical, white, middle class man, privately educated, without disabilities. Apparently I do tick a diversity box now because I hit 50 last year. That apparently makes me old. But I run a consultancy called Token Man Consulting. We specialize in engaging senior leaders and men with inclusion and diversity. That's one of my hats. My other hat actually is, as you talked about, I'm co-founder of Token Man. Token Man is an initiative I co-founded 9 years ago specifically to engage men. Initially, it was with gender equality, but now it's engaging men with inclusion, equity and diversity.
So now we know a bit about yourself, Daniele. Can you tell us, what does Token Man do?
If I go back, it's probably easier to go back 9 years ago where Token Man came from. I was actually at a dinner which I'd organised with 12 women. And I was actually recruiting more women to a collective that I ran in the advertising industry. When I walked through the door and saw 12 women, it wasn't a surprise because I'd organized it. I knew I'd done a dinner with 12 women. But I hadn't really thought about it. I had my day job. I hadn't really thought about it. But what happened as I walked through that door was a surprise, which is I completely lost my confidence. And for people that know me well, they tell me that's not possible. But it was like this invisible hand came down and pulled my confidence away. Then we sat down for dinner. The conversations that were happening around me just seemed to push me even further out. And then I got up to introduce the dinner. And keep in mind, this is a dinner that I organized, I had funded. There was a very clear, was a clear reason for doing it. And as I got halfway through my talk, my co-host cut me off. And whenever I tell this story, and I can see Sarah's face laughing, anyone that's been in the out-group recognises this story because they'll experience a lot of these things when they sit in the out-group within a senior leadership team with a meeting. And I'd never appreciated, and I had heard the stories, but I hadn't appreciated how hard it was to be in the out-group. And as I say, I have many privileges. One of my privileges is that I didn't experience being in the out-group until I was 39 in the workplace. And that's an enormous privilege. And it made me really start to look at my own behaviours. It's made me start to look at my responsibility in actually understanding what I could change. And if you go back 10 years ago, it was certainly 10 years ago, and it has moved forward. I don't think it's moved forward enough, but it has moved forward. 10 years ago, men weren't being invited into the room and often weren't welcome in the room when we talk about gender equality. I'm a hacker. I love solving problems, and I know that no minority in history has ever affected change without the support of the majority. So for me, men needed to be in the room. Token Man was really set up as a space, a brave space, to bring men into the conversation, to allow them to understand, be educated, learn better about what it feels like to be in the out-group and also what they can do to change that. So it very much was focused fundamentally in finding ways of engaging men. And I think that's what continued. Everything we do is about engaging men. We have now, it's our sixth year, so on the 21st of November, we have our Masculinity in the Workplace event. It's one of the only events which is specifically designed to engage men with inclusion and diversity. We have that. It'll be our sixth year we're doing that. I do that with Roxanne Hobbs from the Hobbs Consultancy. And again, that is all about engaging men with inclusion and diversity. So all of our activity on a Token Man level is about engaging men. To cut long story short, Token Man kind of killed my business. I used to work in advertising. I woke up one day. I had no income the next month because I was just... And I know you two volunteer on this, and my hat's off to you because I know how hard it can be. it just became so encompassing that I actually forgot to do new business. And I have many privileges. Not having an income isn't one of those privileges. And so I had to make a decision about 6 years ago. And that decision was to pivot my career. So I started something called Utopia, which is a culture change business, an amazing business. I started with Nadia Powell. I ran that for 5 years. But last year, I decided to leave that to start Token Man Consulting because I wanted to do far deeper work with senior leaders and men. So I've now trained to become a coach because I know from my own experiences how hard that journey is. And a 1 day, 2 day workshop, I'll be honest with you, is just not going to cut it. That's not enough, nowhere enough in terms of the journey that a lot of leaders need to go through.
Now, it's an interesting point you make with the initiative that Token Man does. And it's something I try to tell people is that you can't create inclusion or diversity through exclusion. So if the people that you need to talk to about the issues aren't invited into the conversation, how are they going to initiate change? How are they going to know what's going on? And it's something that I'm quite conscious of as well. So I always say to people, look, if you want to have an event, if you want to have a certain community that's targeting in that event, say, for example, we didn't use women as an example, you can't say it's only women allowed there, because what happens is you're having the same discussions over and over again. I think we need to be quite realistic is that a lot of the issues do repeat themselves. Now, if men aren't invited to the conversations, aren't present, what can happen? How can change be implemented? Because it just becomes a spiral of conversation rather than getting impactful results. So I think that's quite admirable that this has come along and it is something you're working on.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the first ever panel I did was about 9 years ago. It's actually online at the RSA. I don't necessarily want to go and listen to it again because 9 years ago I was very different. But you can imagine, I moved into a space from advertising where I knew nothing. And actually, I went on this panel. It was with the head of the Fawcett Society. It was with the author of Lean Out. Apologise, the names aren't coming to me right now. And there was someone else on the panel. And I was bricking it, absolutely bricking it. And it was just so interesting because at the end of the panel, I had at least five women come up to me and say, thank you. That's the first thing I've heard. First time I've heard something different in this space for the last 3 years. And it wasn't me being super intelligent or super insightful. It was just a man, a white straight man coming on the stage and actually coming at it from a different perspective. And I think we talk about the value of diversity, but often we forget that diversity represents everyone. Everyone can actually help create a diverse team.
I think it's really interesting that your experience of being the only man in the room got you on this path. Quite often in the podcast we've been asking people their tip to making their workplace more inclusive, and everybody pretty much says amongst their tips to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, and as soon as you do that you really see things from a different perspective. And I think it's really going to Andrew's point, do you find that there are events where men are welcome, but they don't feel comfortable to go? So I know that you created the event, which was all women. They walked in and felt uncomfortable. I feel like almost we've gone the other way where women are creating events which men are welcome to, but men don't feel comfortable going there.
I don't think so. It's probably worth talking about how we got to masculine to the workplace, because for the first 4 years, I'm sure we'll come on to this, but for the first 4 years, I came from nowhere. And when you recognize that my first 3 years was a lot of listening, understanding how women were feeling. And so it was good. It was good that I was getting invited to a lot of women's events. One event, I think there were 350 women at me. I really was the token man. But every time I went to those events, I would carry that burden of being a man, because people would always say to me, why aren't the men here? They'd always say to me, why aren't the men here? And I would say the same thing, what reason have you given them to be here? And they couldn't actually answer me. And so where we started to flip and how we got to masculine to the workplace is that I asked the same question, because I really struggled for the first three years to get men in the room. And I'll talk about why I think this relentless pursuit of allyship, and let's be really clear, allyship is one of the keys to unlocking inclusion, equity, and diversity. But when a man only hears allyship and nothing else, that can be problematic. And I can talk through that later. But I think what was interesting for me is I listened to our own advice, and speaking to Roxanne, who was doing something called He and She at the time, we said, okay, let's do a Fathers in the Workplace event. So that's how we started. We actually said, okay, let's do something for men because that's the best way to get them in the room. Let's show them that inclusion, equity and diversity is for them. I think a lot of people say inclusion is for everyone, but often I just don't think men who look like me or experiences like me do feel it's for them, because actually the I&D industry does not think about those men. They actually think they're privileged, and actually all the narrative is men, you need to step in and help others, when often those men themselves are actually struggling. I think we have to accept that everyone needs support. Equity is recognizing that everyone needs different levels of support. So historically marginalized groups they all need additional support beyond someone that looks like me. But it doesn't mean that someone that has had experiences like doesn't need some support, because they do. We know that it's International Men's Day coming up, so it's high on my mind, but you know, mental health issues, fathers still find it hard to have their own networks. I think a lot of fathers are struggling. We obviously know about high suicide rates. And it's really, I've just finished Caitlin Moran's book. I think it really is great to have someone like Caitlin talking about and recognizing the need to actually think about the men. I'm not sure if that answered your question, but...
Yeah, I think it did. I think we're both saying the same thing. It's really important for people. And it's not just the man thing either. Going back to Andrew's point, we've done panels, but like we did the South Asian Heritage Month.
Yeah.
And in the room, I was the only white person and everybody else was of South Asian heritage. And it was great that they were sharing stories and all that kind of thing, but they were sharing it for everybody to improve understanding. So it's a very similar thing. Men do need to feel included because of the inclusion and diversity, but also absolutely male suicide and mental health and everything is such a vital, important thing to be talking about, that we mustn't forget that we're all part of the inclusivity journey and that everybody, you know, should be counted, as it were.
And I think what's interesting for me, so if I look at that example you just given, I do a lot of 50% of my work at Token Man Consulting is inclusive leadership. I would argue that people, and it's not just men, people should be in this room as part of their culture intelligence. So for me, I think that's why I think we need to be clear on the messaging we're giving people. Because if we keep on telling people, you need to be in the room to be better allies, they're like, okay, so I need to be better allies to everyone. What does that mean? How do I prioritize that? What does that look like? Whereas I'm very clear that if you're going to be an inclusive leader who's successful in the next 5 years, you have to have that culture intelligence. And these events are fundamental to building up that culture intelligence. So although it seems very selfish, I do think that we can, the route to doing this is understanding the benefits. The talk that I do every year around this time, around International Men's Day, is the benefits of men leaning into inclusion and diversity. There are some huge benefits to people leaning in. We did a study last year. It's called the Men Leaning In Research. You can find it on the tokenman.org website. You know, what was lovely, we surveyed just over 100 people, men that were actually actively leaning in. And the good question that we asked was, are you a better leader and or human being as a result of the work you've done? 97% said yes. Who wouldn't want to be that?
Absolutely. So obviously you and I both have marketing backgrounds. Do you think that then, taking that conversation on, that allyship is an outdated misnomer? And actually what we should be talking about is that it's almost the positioning of... The problem is that we all need to be talking about equality and diversity and inclusivity to make the world a better place. We need to be working on it together. Allyship, exactly that. It feels very channeled. What kind of ally are you going to be? You have to pick one, but actually it's not that. And then going back to your cultural intelligence feels like a little bit of a leap, but that's the benefit to everyone for getting involved. So where is it in between that we go, everybody, we need to be working together. You need the cultural intelligence to achieve change and help change the world. But it's not just, but allyship's more than just being an ally to one group of people.
Yeah, and also I think allyship is, also, if you look at my definition, I do training as well around allyship, is we actually define allyship. We include it within the deck, which is the general description is supporting historically marginalized groups. I actually talk much more on allyship to everyone. I think men need to be better allies to men. I do think, and again, I was on a podcast recently with Cheryl Miller. I love Cheryl's just on a post talking about should women be better allies to men? The answer to that for me is 100% yes. We do need that empathy. We do need that support. The journey I know I'm working with men and asking them to go on is hard. I'd be lying if I said the last 9 years was easy. It hasn't. It's been really hard. It's included my own executive coaching. It's included therapy. It's actually impacted my mental health to a certain extent, but I'm absolutely fine now. I think I was lucky because I was already in therapy and I understood the benefit of therapy. So coming back to your question of allyship still, we looked at 3 years ago of taking on allyship because I know from historically, so a lot of historically marginalized people were actually seeing allyship as quite negative because of the amount of performative allyship that actually exists. However, having looked at the corporate space and understand the corporate space, I've seen some companies do some really interesting work and they're actually using male allies as a way of engaging men. So actually we're working with Hitachi Vantara to help build their allies group to actually bring more men into this. So I don't think we should throw it out. I think what we need to do is understand that everyone's on a different part of the journey. So I don't think it should be the only message to men. So if you look at I work with clients to help them build their engaging men strategy. So we've actually got three stages to that, very clear stages. And what we say is you need to be doing a equal proportion of each. So the first one is support. So what are you doing to support your men? And let's remember, it's interesting. I ran a workshop not so long ago with a group of women, and I asked women to think about, and it's the first time I'd ever thought about this, that what are the challenges that men are facing in the workplace right now? And what was super interesting, firstly, as I expected, it was actually really rich. They came up with they covered most of the bases for a white straight man. Because when I said men, all they thought about was white straight men. Okay, because let's be honest, that's still the position. A lot of the positions of power are held by white straight men. But people forget that men are intersectional. So there's lots of things, and understanding that and the nuances are very different. So firstly, it's support. So that might be, do you have a father's network? I think if any business doesn't have a father's network, they need to be doing it. They need to be picking up the phone to Elliot Ray or Hanson Lee, who are doing some amazing work in this space, and actually creating a father's network. Are they looking at mental health? So BA Systems, for example, I think I know to Arthur, for example, BA Systems, they created men's circles during lockdown. And I know they've saved one of their staff's lives as a result of doing that. So what are you doing to support? So when people see inclusion and diversity, they go, actually, do you know what? You are supporting everyone. I can see the value you're giving us. Then the middle section is really important. So the inspire bit. So what happens is, to your point about going back to that room and men being scared to speak up, the biggest thing we hear is men are scared to say the wrong thing. Okay, so I'm sure you talk about in the work that you both do is the need to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think what people forget is when you've spent your whole career in the in-group, you've spent your whole career hardly ever being uncomfortable. So most of those people are not equipped to be uncomfortable. So the minute you put them in a situation where they are uncomfortable, they freak out. They don't have the tools. They don't know how to do it. So you have to, and that includes being able to call in, call out, call forward. Anything you're doing, any bystander intervention, understanding you've got to give them the tools. Because unless you give them the tools and then you pull them in to be an ally, what they'll do is they'll fail. And when people fail is that it's very easy to retrench and go back to the position they were in before. The other side of, sorry, it's support, inspire. So within inspire, you've also got just understanding that when we talk about inclusive leadership, the three skills that I mainly focus on are empathy, culture, intelligence, and vulnerability. Those things aren't things you're going to learn in the classroom in 24 hours. You're going to learn them in the workplace, and they're going to take time. To become a vulnerable leader might take you, a more empathetic leader, might take you 12, 18 months, 24 months. But I think the most insightful comment I got from one of the CEOs that I've done work with, he said to me, Daniela, you've got to understand, for the first time in my career, I'm not just being asked to be different at work, I'm being asked to be different at home. And I think people think that when we forget that the skills that we're teaching them, they go right to the soul of who you are as a human being. And that hasn't been the case in the past when we look at leadership skills. So I think for me, understanding that challenge and actually understanding the support, and once they've got this, once they feel that IND is for everyone, once they have that kind of more, they've got the tools, the confidence, then you can bring them in to be allies and agents of change. So what you're going to be doing at any one time is actually speaking to three different audiences. That's not obviously that easy, but you can start to signpost certain events based on where they sit. This is about, it's in the language, this is really, this event's about supporting men. This event is about inspiring men. This event is about getting more men to lean in. And you don't have necessarily, I think there's something interesting to talk about language, Sarah. And I think for me, I think having some softer language, if we know that some people have been put off by being told, and they shouldn't, let's be really clear here, they shouldn't be. We all need to be better allies than agents of change. But people don't necessarily know that yet, or they don't have the understanding yet to understand what that means and why they should be doing it. So any language we can do to soften, to bring people in, I think is really important.
I think you've just given definitely an eye-opening experience, because I remember the comment when I said you can't create inclusion through exclusion, and your comment of why should I be there? I was like, that's a very good point. Why should they be there? And that's, I've never been completely honest and vulnerable. I've never thought about that. Because I always just said, you should be there to show support. It's basically like that. But what's the hook? What's the why's in there? So, yeah, no, thank you. I'm like, you just taught me something today.
and actually, the problem we have, and it is a problem, I haven't got the quote off the top of my head, but there's a bullet. If you haven't read The Descent of Man by Grayson Perry, everyone needs to read that book. It's a fantastic book. It's very short. It's still quite a hard read, because it's hard just to recognize it and accept it. But Grayson talks about default man prioritizing career fundamentally, and very logical, and very, and then talks about default woman prioritizing emotion, family, etc., etc. And there's definitely a truth in that there is, men. Robert Webb talks about how not to be a boy. If we start talking about some of the issues that men have around suicide rates and mental health, he said when a boy hears not to show their feelings enough times, they start to hear not to feel those feelings. And Bell Hooks talks about it in The Will to Change, another brilliant book, talks about men becoming disconnected with their feelings, which is 100% right. So we have this kind of, what we see a lot is men in the workplace, and again, I'm generalizing, but a lot of men will only dedicate stuff if it will help their career. Yeah. So at the moment, there are very few organizations that going to a Black History Month event will help their career. I have run a lot of groups with a lot of men in it. I can tell you now that a leader, someone's boss, he's actually the co-chair of a gender network. His boss told him that him being a co-chair is damaging his career. I know, Sarah, but can I tell you, these are not isolated incidents. I hear it from men who are leaning in. I was on the phone yesterday to a leader who is going through transition job, and he is one of the most inclusive leaders I know, and he doesn't have a role now because they didn't want an inclusive leader. Can you actually believe it? And so, listen, not all companies like that. I was in a company yesterday where they said, when we asked them to find inclusive leadership, they just went, that's leadership, isn't it? They need to be the same thing. I'm like, 100% I agree with you. Unfortunately, I would say that 90% of organizations right now aren't rewarding or valuing inclusive leadership. That's the reality. And that's why we're all doing what we're doing, because we have to shift that.
Yeah, it's a big challenge to move that dial. And then that's why all these scandals happen, because they haven't got inclusion in the DNA and they don't encourage positive behaviours. And then they scrabble around and try and put a band-aid on it. But that's a different conversation.
It is.
Let's get back on track with the questions. So it's really interesting what you were saying, Daniele, about the exercise you do about what challenges men facing. That's one of the things we do, not men per se, but that's what we explore in the school program. So one of our sessions is what it is to be a man. And we draw around a kid and we write all the kind of stereotypes on the inside and then discuss what it really is like to be a man on the outside. And it's quite eye-opening. And the kids aren't as bling, because they're younger. So society hasn't quite shaped them into thinking of just a white middle-class man. And then the following week, we do a debate where the class splits into two and they self-select which side they're going to take. And the subject is either it's easier to be a man in this world or it's easier to be a woman. And they have to debate it. And it's so interesting what they talk about. But it is a totally different view. And it's very refreshing to know that you can be impacting kids before they have these pre-formulated, preconceived ideas. So that's really good. Anyway, moving on. How do you measure success in everything that you're doing?
The obvious answer is impact, right? It's funny, isn't it? I did an event yesterday, and I was talking about myself as a leader 10 years ago. I think that's a long. I'm an ex-CEO, and I just said ultimately, what I know now is so different to what I knew then. I've been on a huge empathy journey. I've been on a huge vulnerability journey. I've been on a huge journey around listening. I trained to be a coach last year. That's given me a much better understanding of the power of silence. And they said to me, don't you regret that you didn't have those skills 10 years ago when you were that CEO? And I went, no, not at all, because I'm now able to touch so many people with this message and get them to shift. And I know for every CEO, every senior leader who actually becomes a more inclusive leader, I'm actually having more impact than I could ever had just running my own company. And so for me, it's seeing that tangible change. I think, and again, that tangible change can be almost immediate. That's where my optimism comes from, is that the word that I... There's two things that I think I really do. Firstly, why was I who I was 10 years ago? I was ignorant, totally ignorant. I'm not saying that as a pejorative. I'm just saying I just didn't understand. I didn't know what I didn't know. Yeah, I had no idea what it felt like to be in the out-group. And hopefully have shown in filling those gaps, I'm able to behave differently. I'm able to do things differently. And that's my experience, is that once you start to fill that gap, most people are good people. And so they can understand how they do things differently. The second level actually is what I'd call a mindset shift. I sometimes, when I looked at my previous consultancy, Utopia, I talked about it, a mindset shift consultancy, is getting people to understand and think differently. I'll give you a good example of that mindset shift, which we talk about a lot, is we hear a lot of people saying one of the defense mechanisms for not having a diverse team is, yeah, but I've always hired the best person for the job. And we're like, when you understand the value of, listen, unconscious bias tells you that a lot of the time that's just not true. But also, we also know there's lots of barriers that mean the best people for the job often just can't get through into that space. But when you understand the value of diversity, we shouldn't be hiring for the best person for the job. We should be hiring the best person for the team. When people start making that shift, is they start hiring differently. So for me, it's about understanding what those shifts will be. So coming back to your answer, every engagement that I will do with a client, we will look at measurements within their business, but often it'll be their measurements and they'll be measuring it themselves. Just very quick, I ran PepsiCo's female sponsorship program. And as part of that sponsorship program, we did stipulate that we needed to train the sponsors around dominant cultures and the impact of dominant cultures. And we needed to train them to get them to understand how the women were feeling, what they were experiencing. Because I think too often sponsorship programs just try and train women to assimilate within a culture that's not inclusive. And so for us, we said we need to get to change that culture. What was lovely for us is 3 weeks in, when we got the women together, they already had started seeing differences. They'd already seen an increased openness, an increased empathy, increased vulnerability from their leaders. So you can see it, and it can have a significant impact. So for me, it's really behaviours are the things that we're trying to change, and actually how, and ultimately the biggest measure is how the historically marginalised group are feeling. How are they feeling? I'm going to say it. I'm not a fan of engagement surveys because I just think they just use so badly. Engagement surveys, we went into one business and they went, yeah, we got an amazing feedback score on engagement. So 87% of our staff are really happy to work here. They're totally engaged. So remind me your gender split. Oh, 87% men, 13% women. Oh, funny that. And what coincidence are those things? And they just don't look at the 30. I'm only an engagement survey. I'm only interested in the 13% in that particular case. Why are that 13% feeling disengaged? And often it's because they're just feeling completely excluded.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. And so to bring things to an end, can you tell us, what are you most proud of achieving in your diversity and inclusion journey?
Such a hard question. I couldn't say one thing. And the one thing I would say is I'm hoping that my answer will be different in 2 years. My answer will be different in 4 years. My answer will be 6 years. I still think I'm at the beginning. To a certain extent, it has to be Token Man, simply because it's been going for 9 years. It's been an amazing platform for so many things. Sitting here now, masculinity in the workplace is on the 21st of November. I would love to, it is exclusive to our partners, but I would love to extend an invite to both of you. I will send you a link. I'd love you both to come. It is so powerful to be in a room full of men that look like me, similar experiences to me, who really want to drive change. It's a really good, optimistic space. And also, do you know what? What was lovely for me is one of my fates. So I run a number of networks, but I run something called the Token Man Brain Trust, which is for C-suite leaders who want to accelerate inclusion, equity, and diversity across industry. One of those members is Greg Randall from Innocent. I actually met him 6 years ago, I think, on the Brené Brown course run by Roxanne Hobbs. It all fits nicely together. But he said to me, in a session we're running, he said that masculinity in the workplace was like his re-energizing time. He comes to these events, he comes to most of our monthly events. These are great. They re-energize me for 3 days, 4 days. You know, it gives me that lift to go in and actually do the allyship work that actually is outside my day job. It is competing against other priorities in my life, but I know it's important. And so he said, masculinity in the workplace for me re-energizes me for 6 months. And so I think that's the thing that I go, do you know what? If we can be that space that actually gives those men the impetus, the energy to go in and actually make real change in their business, then that for me is change and that's impact.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Daniele. Daniele, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much for your time. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in and watch out for our next episode of Together Equal Diversity Made Simple.